She said nothing, and the tears came again, but somewhere inside a tightness eased. The city had been silent now for more than a week. No more taunts over the wall, no pots of hot oil, no stones. Heads showed above the battlements occasionally, and the gates were barred, but the enthusiasm of the defenders had gone. Pox wondered if they were going to surrender. Late one afternoon, a trio of Sorellan militia rode into the siege lines from the north. In minutes, messengers came to the Duke. Soon everyone knew that they had found a tunnel from the brigands' hideout, where Kana and Sabin had been found, into Rotengra. A small group of Rotengran soldiers had come out in their midst. Now Sorellan controlled the forest end of the passage.
"That must be how the Honeycat meant to relieve the siege," said Vic.
"And why he wanted live prisoners," said Pox. "Once he had them in the city..."
"Yes, ugh. I wonder where the Rotengra end is. If only we could use it."
"With an attack on the walls at the same time, yes. Or if they're all trying to escape that way, we could just sit there and take them as they come."
"I'd rather go in."
Arnie looked eager. Pox grinned. "So would I. I never heard of a tunnel that long. I wonder who dug it, and when."
"The reputation this city's got," said Vic. "It may have been there since the walls were built. It would explain a lot of things about Rotengra."
As dusk fell, the entire camp bubbled with speculation. They mustered after supper, and the Duke explained their plans. The Fulani would assault the wall, while the Halverics tried their ram on the north gate. Vladi had taken a couple of spear cohorts and joined the Sorellan militia for an assault through the tunnel. The remaining Sorellan militia would attack with their catapult and ladder teams. Krakolnia's cohort would lead the Fulani assault, followed by Doran's. These instructions were followed by a breathless wait in the dark. Suddenly, the Halveric's ram battered at the north gate, and an outcry came from the gate tower above. Torches flared along the walls. As heads showed, the Duke's bowmen let fly. Returning flights came out of the darkness to bristle in rampart and tent. Pox heard not only the regular crash of the battering ram, but the occasional stunning crack of the Sorellan catapult stone balls slamming into the wall itself. Horn calls and shouts from inside the city redoubled, loudest from the gate tower. Then Pox heard more distant signals from the south side. She realized that the south gate, too, must be under attack. Now, with others of Doran's cohort, she stood at the base of the ladders as the specialists of the mixed cohort led the climbing teams up. These made it to the top before being seen and secured the ladders as the first fighting teams came up. Pox below heard the scream of the Rotengra guard who first saw them, then a body slammed into the ground nearby. Those on the ladder surged upward. As soon as they could get footspace on the rungs, others followed.
"Keep your shields up," yelled Captain Punt. "Cover your heads until you're up."
Pox found the ladder harder than she remembered, as she tried to balance with her shield arched over her. By the time she reached the top, the Duke's men formed two lines across the wall, protecting access for those still climbing. She was surprised to see green-clad Halverics coming off the ladders behind her companions, but had no time to think about it. She jogged up to join the line moving toward the gate tower. Facing them were two lines of Rotengra guards in blue, and more ran from the direction of the gate tower. The Fulani advanced. The Rotengra lines retreated, even before making contact. When they pursued and engaged, the enemy still retreated, though their swordwork was excellent.
"Keep pressing 'em," yelled Vasek. "They'll break. Keep at 'em."
Even as he spoke, those on the inside of the wall tried to slip down a stair to the city below. Bowstrings twanged behind Pox. At least two fell from the stairs. Vasek told a party to hold the stairs against any assault. Now they were close to the gate tower. The rear ranks of defenders turned and raced for the tower doors as a heavy fire of arrows struck the Duke's men from an upper level. Several fell. Pox and the others threw up their shields and charged, trying to make the tower door before it was slammed against them. The remaining defenders went down under the charge. Pox raced through a gap to hit the closing door with all her strength. Instantly, several of her companions were there to help, and together they forced the door open, battling past the defenders. More of the Duke's men poured into the opening. They had entered a small chamber that ran along the west side of the gate tower. Two doors opened into a larger room where Pox caught a glimpse of the gate machinery before the door slammed.
"We'll need to get those doors down,"
said Vasek. He had come limping in after the others, having taken a crossbow bolt in the leg.
And those plaguey bowmen are somewhere overhead, too.
They looked around, but saw no access to the upper level. They could feel the concussion when the Halveric ram hit the gates.
How about that door we just took?
Asked Vic.
Good, said Vasek. Take it apart and see if it won't make us some rams.
With four stout lengths of oak from the first door, they began smashing at the inner doors, a squad for each. All at once, one of them splintered between the bars that held it, and they smashed the rest of the wood free and poured through. The expected line of crossbowmen met them. The first flight bristled in their shields. Before the bowmen could reload, the Duke's men were on them, and they fell in a welter of blood that made the floor slippery. The remaining defenders, some 20, had no chance. As they darted toward the stair that led to ground level, the attackers cut them down. Vasek stopped them from following the few survivors downstairs.
Wait. We need to get these gates open.
Here, sir.
It was a mixed cohort man.
Just let me get to those pulleys.
Need any help?
Just a moment. Yes. Here. Two of you do this.
He demonstrated. And two over here on this one. They pushed on the windlass spokes. Chains tightened and slid through great pulleys above and below. Beneath them, the heavy gate creaked open. They heard wild cheers from the Halverics. Meanwhile, someone had identified the portcullis mechanism, and several were at work to raise the massive grate. Pox looked out the window that looked into the city. She could see torches in the street below and gleams of steel.
Pox.
It was Artfiel, one of the new corporals Doran had named. She turned. Take a squad, and make sure the gate tower is secure on the east. I expect they've all fled into the city, but I'd hate to be surprised. Pox collected a 10 squad and found a long, narrow room on the east side, twin to the one they'd broken into on the west, except that here, a narrow ladder led through a hole in the ceiling to the higher level. One of the bowmen scampered up this, to report no enemy above, and no one visible on the wall. Pox went back to Artfiel, and he assigned a squad of archers to keep watch from the upper level. She took her own squad out onto the east wall. From the streets below rose a confused clamor and the deep chant of the Halveric foot. Pox found a stair going down and positioned her squad to guard it. They could see very little, but she was not tempted to light a torch. They peered into darkness with its confusing patches of wavering torchlight and tried to interpret the noise. Coming out from under the gate tower now were mounted troops, the horses' hooves ringing on stone, and behind that the Sorellan foot. Far across the city, Pox saw a bright blur of flame atop a tower. Now they heard shrieks from below, and again the clash and clang of weapons. Pox yearned to go down the stair and be part of it, but she knew Artfiel was right. A desperate or cunning enemy might try to climb the wall and retake the gate tower or escape. Gradually, the noise receded toward the center of the city. There, it intensified. A harsh, uneven roar punctuated by occasional high-pitched outbursts. It was cold on the wall. Pox huddled into her cloak, cursing the orders that kept her idle and cold when a good fight raged. The tower door opened. Pox glanced toward it, to see a tall figure stepping out on the wall. She stood, stamping her feet, as the Duke came up.
Any trouble?
No, my lord.
Good. Foss Council Militia are going to take over the wall. Bring your squad. I dare say you'd like to be in at the finish.
Yes, my lord.
Very well. We'll go back through the tower.
The Duke led them, nodding at the Foss Council captain as they passed into the tower. At the foot of the stairs, a squire held the Duke's charger. The others, who had been in the tower, bunched nearby. He mounted and rode slowly up the wide street toward the battle. Pox and her squad marched on his left. 2 squires rode in front with torches. The street was ominously silent. Pox feared that hidden archers might shoot the Duke, but nothing happened. As they came to the center of the city, they could see more torchlight and fire set against the walls of the old keep. This keep, the Duke had said, formed an interior defense completely separate from the outer walls. The Halveric ram battered this inner gate. Defenders crowded the wall. Fire arrows flew in both directions. Something inside the keep was burning. Heavy smoke blew away on the north wind. They had just reached the rear of the attacking lines when shrill screams broke out inside, and the men on the wall turned to look. At once, the attackers flung up ladders and swarmed up the wall. Pox, waiting beside the Duke, found herself dancing from foot to foot. The gates opened, and the ram crew surged forward, followed by everyone who could cram into that narrow space. The Duke rode on, forcing a passage with his horse. Pox shoved her way alongside. Within the gates, all was confusion. Several small buildings were on fire, lighting the court with dancing yellow that glinted off weapons and armor. It was hard to tell defenders from attackers, Retengra blue from Halveric green or Foss Council gray. Pox started yelling the Fulani battle cry after nearly being spitted by one of Vladi's spearmen. The fight raged until every defender lay dead in the court or passages of the keep. Even then, the noise and confusion continued, for the attackers turned to plunder. Pox had never seen anything like this, or imagined it. She expected the captains to call them all to order, but instead they urged on their troops or ignored them. Fights broke out between militia and mercenaries over bales of silk, caskets of jewels, kegs of wine and ale. Only then did the officers step in to restore peace. At first, Pox stayed out of the way, carrying water to some of the Duke's wounded, until wagons came to take them back to camp. But when Vasek found her standing in an angle of the inner wall, he took her arm and led her upstairs.
"This is where we make our stakes," he said, laughing. "Don't worry. The Duke said we could sack the keep. Try not to get in fights is all. Look, here's a good place to start."
He shoved open the door of a small room that had been a study. Scrolls littered the floor around an overturned desk, its drawers scattered.
"These things always have secret compartments," said Vasek, "and militia are hasty. Watch."
He wrenched a leg off a chair and smashed the desk apart. A handful of loose jewels bounced across the floor.
"That's what I meant," he said. "Go on, take 'em."
Pox scooped up the little chips of blue, red, and yellow, the first jewels she had ever held. Vasek looked at them critically.
"I'll take this."
He picked out a red one and a blue one,
"as my share for showing you how. Get busy now, or these damned lazy militia will get all the good loot."
He left Pox alone in the room. She put the stones in her pouch and looked at the smashed desk. Was there another compartment? She picked up the chair leg. By dawn, Pox had prowled through most of the rooms in the keep. Her pouch bulged with coins and jewels. She had a strip of embroidered silk wrapped around her neck and a jewel-hilted dagger thrust into one boot. She could not bring herself to destroy furniture, so most of her finds were bits and pieces that had rolled out of sight of earlier plunderers. Now she headed downstairs, hoping to find something to eat. Along the way, she passed drunken, sleeping fighters snoring beside the dead. Pox wrinkled her nose at the stench of blood, sour wine, vomit, and smoke. In the courtyard, a circle of soldiers were cooking over the remnants of a burning shed. Everyone seemed to be draped in stolen finery, velvet and fur cloaks, bits of lace and silk that might have been shawls, gold and silver chains and bracelets. Pox looked around for someone she knew. These were all militiamen from Sirelin and Vanja. "Where's Duke Phelan's company?" she asked one of them. His mouth was full of sausage, but he pointed toward the keep gates. Pox made her way out into the streets.
"There you are," said Vic.
He had a green velvet cap with a feather atop his helmet.
"Have you had breakfast yet?"
"No,"
Pox yawned.
"Have you? I wish I could sleep."
"Here."
Vic handed her a roll and a hunk of cheese.
"I tried some of the food from their kitchen, but this is better. What did you find in there? Anything good?"
Pox nodded, her mouth full of bread.
"We're supposed to clear the Northwest Quadrant today, but what we find goes to the common store. Worse luck."
Vic shook his head, then grinned.
"Though I've as much as I can carry now."
Pox swallowed noisily. "I've got some jewels and money and this." She indicated the strip of silk. "Did you see those militia?"
"Furs and things?" "Yes, well, they have baggage wagons to go home in. How do you like my new hat?"
Pox thought it was as silly as a lace shawl, but didn't want to say so.
"It'll travel well, rolled up," he said seriously, "except for the feather. And any barnyard cock will give me a new one."
"Yes, well, it's nice, Vic." Pox yawned again and ate the cheese. She emptied her water flask. A haze of smoke hung over the city. The wind had dropped. "When do we start?"
"When the captain gets back. Gah,
I'm sleepy, too.
Vic settled against the wall and put his head on his knees. After a moment, Pock squatted beside him. She looked around. Maybe a third of the company was visible along this stretch of wall. Most slumped against it, or each other, and looked asleep. Some were chatting quietly. Bundles wrapped in a variety of unlikely things, curtains, bed linens, lay among them. Pox had not thought of that. She did not realize she'd fallen asleep until Captain Doran's voice woke her. She yawned again as she pushed herself up. She was stiff and cold. Others looked worse than she felt. She was glad she hadn't been drinking all that ale and wine. Unlike the chaos of the night before, the day's sack was systematic and careful. Pox worked with a squad of 10 assigned to go through buildings along one street. They began with a house, smashing its locked door, and opening every door of every room from cellar to garret. When they knew what it contained, they reported to a sergeant, who told them what to load in which order. Pox carried out one armful after another, bed linens, cookpots, clothes from clothes presses, a roll of fine wool from a room with a loom in it. Her companions brought the loom, a sack full of scrolls, dishes and spoons, shoes and boots and hats, a patterned carpet, a trunk full of uncut velvet, everything they could move. As the rooms emptied, they thumped the walls, listening for any sign of a secret hideaway. Pox felt strange, rummaging around in someone else's clothes press, carrying away a stranger's empty garments. In a small room under the eaves, Pox found a string of tiny bells under the short bed. When she shook them, they gave a faint musical chime, a child's toy. She looked out the window across the street and saw a bolt of blue cloth unwinding as it fell. Ariel shouted from below, angry. Pox turned away. She felt a vague pain in her head and wondered if it came from the smoke still hazing the city. Down in the cellar, someone found a hollow-sounding panel and smashed it. Behind was a row of wine casks and a little iron-bound coffer. With much grunting and heaving, they got these up the stairs. Ariel ducked into the house to check it, and came out nodding. They passed to the next building, and the next. Not all were as rich as the first, but by midday, they had piled two wagons full of loot. Other companies were clearing their assigned sections, and wagons were lined up coming and going from the different camps. All afternoon, the work went on. Houses, shops, and warehouses, with a few crafts shops. Pox found a secret passage in one shop, following it to a vault full of fancy leathers and fabrics. In the next house along, Pox heard a thin wail behind a wall on the third floor. For a moment, she thought of saying nothing about it, but her squad leader had heard it too. Behind the false wall, a thin girl of perhaps 14 clung to an infant less than 2 months old. She wore only a rough shift, and an iron ring circled her neck. Her eyes were blank with fear. "Just a slave," said Aris, the squad leader, in disgust. "Come on out, we won't hurt you." The girl shivered, but did not move. "Come on." He reached for her arm, and the girl threw herself at Pox, holding up the baby, who began to cry. Aris gave Pox a wry grin. "Your problem now, Pox. Take her to the captain." He turned away. Pox reached gingerly toward the baby, and the girl let go so fast that Pox almost dropped the child. It screamed louder, and the girl cried out in a strange language and fell to her knees. "It's all right," said Pox, convinced that it wasn't. "I won't hurt your baby. Here, you take—" She tried to hand the baby back, but the girl was kneeling and would not look up until Pox touched her shoulder. Even then, she would not stand, and Pox had to fold the girl's arms around the child before she would take it. "Now, come," said Pox softly, and tugged her shoulder. The girl started crying. "Look," said Pox, "I won't hurt you or your baby, but you must come." The girl kept crying and made no move to reply. Pox straightened to ease a cramp in her back and glanced around. By just so much, the crossbow bolt missed her as it passed over the kneeling slave to stick quivering in the wall. A crack showed in the back of the recess. Pox stared a split second as it widened, then yelled as she swept out her sword and charged. Behind her, she heard the girl shriek and the clatter of boots as her squad came to her aid. Her sword smashed the half-open panel, and she grabbed the crossbow left-handed jerking it away from the dark-robed man who stood in a second recess. She freed her sword from the shattered panel as he reached to his belt for his dagger. Huddled beside him was a woman in a silk gown, and behind were a youth and a girl, both richly dressed.
"Come out of there," said Pox grimly.
The man shook his head and said something she could not make out. He had the dagger out and held it as if he knew how to fight. Pox did not like the cramped space. She started to step back. The man spoke again, and a blow from behind knocked her off balance as a thin arm crooked around her neck. At once the man struck. Pox deflected the blow with her sword, feeling a sting on her knuckles as the four of them rushed her. She heard a shout from behind, then a scream. The weight fell from her back. The arm no longer choked her. She half-stumbled backwards. Two of her squad were beside her, swords drawn.
"What happened?" asked Aris.
"Crossbow, from a concealed panel behind the first recess," said Pox,
gasping a little. She did not take her eyes from the man in front of her.
"Just missed me while I was trying to get that slave to move. I saw the opening and found those behind it. She jumped me from behind. I think he told her to, but I don't know the language, and they all tried to spit me."
"Damned northern war crows," the man burst out. "May you all die strung from the walls like the carrion you are."
"Come out, or I'll call pikes," said Aris calmly. The man muttered in the unknown tongue.
"Now,"
said Aris. The man stood still, as if considering, and the girl behind him began to cry. For some reason, this made Pox angry.
"Stop that noise," she said roughly,
and the girl looked at her and was still, tears still running down her face. The man glared at Pox.
"I should have killed you 2 times, you great cow, and you still live."
He spat at Pox, but it fell short. She felt her companion stiffen, and Aris's voice roughened.
"Drop that knife and come out, or we'll kill you all."
The man looked at the knife in his hand, then reversed it, and threw it spinning at Pox's chest. She jerked her shoulder aside, and it bounced off her corselet, but again the four rushed forward. She thrust her sword into the man's robe. His weight bore her back. When she tried to step back, she tripped over the slave's body. The silk-clad woman had pulled out a dagger to slash at the soldier before her. She, too, was cut down. The youth had a short sword, which he had held hidden behind the man, and fought the soldier on Pox's left with surprising skill. The girl, no longer crying, had a slim stiletto with which she attacked the soldier fighting the boy. Pox grabbed her arm, and the girl struck at her face. Almost in reflex, Pox thrust in her sword, and the girl folded over with a cry. At the same time, the soldier got past the youth's guard and sank his sword into him. The boy's weapon fell with a clatter. Pox took a breath and looked around. Aris met her eyes.
"That was a new one. Sorry, Pox, I didn't know."
Pox shook her head.
"I shouldn't have gone between them. Not after the crossbow. Is the slave?"
"Dead. Sim stuck her when she was choking you."
"It wasn't her fault."
Pox looked for the baby, but it too was dead, having caught a stray blade stroke. No one knew whose, and no one cared to guess. They wiped their blades on the man's robes and examined the inner recess, but found nothing more.
"They'll have something somewhere," said Aris. "Let's check 'em over."
The man was dead, but the woman and the two younger ones were still barely alive. At Aris's nod, the other soldiers gave each the death stroke and began to search the bodies. Pox, suddenly shaky about the knees, leaned on the wall. She could not get out of her mind the frightened face of the slave kneeling at her feet. Her knuckles burned. She looked at the shallow cut from the man's dagger, she supposed. She glanced at the window. Nearly dark now.
No, that can't be right. We couldn't see in here.
She realized she was sliding down the wall.
Pox, what's wrong?
Aris had her arm. She felt very strange.
"I think this dagger's poisoned," said someone from a distance,
and someone else added, "So's this sword, if the stain on the blade means anything."
"Pox, did that dagger cut you?"
Aris seemed to be yelling very softly. She held up her hand and felt it taken and turned. Someone cursed. Boots clattered over the floor and into the passage. Pox opened her eyes again and found that everything seemed a strange shade of green. She blinked, tasting something vile, and tried to think what had happened. Someone pushed the edge of a flask against her lips and said, "Swallow." She did. For an instant or so,
She thought a whirling wind was loose inside her, and then her vision cleared. Sim held the daggers, stiletto, and sword. Captain Doran peered at their blades.
This sticky orange stuff is almost certainly some kind of poison, either weak or slow-acting, to judge by its effect on Pox. Put these aside carefully, and we'll let the surgeon see them.
Doran glanced at Pox.
You better?
When Pox nodded, her face relaxed, and she offered a hand up.
You keep pushing your luck, Pox, and you won't have any left.
Sorry, Captain.
Pox still felt remote, but that sensation cleared quickly. The others had found several small pouches in the dead family's clothes, and the man's belt had a long packet sewn in, which bulged suggestively. Under his outer robes, he wore a massive silver chain with a curious medallion. As Kerr slid it out, the captain swore. Pox peered at it, wondering what was wrong. As big as a man's palm, it looked like a silver spider, legs outstretched on a web.
Drop that, said Doran harshly,
as Kerr started to touch the medallion itself. Startled, he obeyed. The captain drew her sword and slipped it beneath the chain. The chain and medallion let off a pale green glow and slithered away from the sword point, which was also glowing.
By all the gods and Falk's oath, said Doran, it's a real one.
Isn't that the web mistress's sign? Asked Sim nervously.
Yes. Don't any of you touch it. It's the right size for one of her priest's symbols, and they're dangerous.
Doran touched the point of her sword to the medallion. Green light flared upward, and a rotten stench filled the room. The sword's glow was clearly visible now, blue and steady against the pulsing green. Doran pulled the sword back, and both glows faded.
Well, that's that. We can hardly leave it there. We need a cleric to counter it.
Pox. Pox jerked her eyes away from the medallion. Was it moving slowly? The captain nodded when their eyes met. Go find the Duke, and tell him we need a cleric. Don't tell anyone else.
Wait.
Do you have Kana's Girdish medallion?
Yes, Captain.
You're wearing it?
Yes, Captain. Isn't that all right?
Doran gave her a long look. Seeing it probably saved your life, I would say it's all right. It's well known St. Gerd has no love for a Kriya web mistress. But let's see, take it out. Pox fished the medallion out of her tunic. Doran took it and let the chain slip through her fingers until it hung above the silver spider on the floor. Again the green glow rose from the spider, but the crescent above did not change. Doran handed it back to Pox.
Yours is the weaker one. Or at least, it doesn't reveal any power. Still, you're alive, and he isn't.
She nudged the dead man with her boot. Go on, find the Duke, and the rest of you search these bodies carefully. We might find more mischief. Pox tucked Kana's medallion back into her tunic as she jogged down the stairs. By the time she'd found the Duke and carried his message to a tall man in black armor in Vladi's camp, a blade master of Tur, it was dark. She was both eager and afraid to see what he would do, but Doran met her on the stairs and sent her back to camp. It's priest work now, and none of ours, she said firmly. We've much to do tomorrow and much to guard tonight. You're on second watch. Get some food into you and rest before you're called. The next day brought no such excitements, but more work, as they cleared the rest of their sector. Pox could not begin to guess how many bales of cloth, rolls of carpet, boxes, bags, and trunks of movable treasure, copper, bronze, and iron pots, dresses, gowns, robes, tunics, shirts, shoes, boots, buckles, combs, scrolls, daggers, swords, shields, bows, bowstrings, arrows, war hammers and wood hammers, battle axes and felling axes, reels of yarn and fine thread, needles, knives, forks, spoons of wood and pewter and silver and gold, figurines carved of wood and ivory and stone, harps and horns and pipes of all sizes they had taken and packed in wagons. The very thought of all those things made her tired. What could people use it all for? A well-stocked larder or armory made sense, but not all the rest. In one house, she had seen shelves of little carvings, horses, men, women, fish, leaves of different shapes, birds. What could anyone do with those but look at them? No one worshipped that many gods. She had run her hands over fine silks and velvets, furs of all colors, and handled lace so fine she feared it would tear in her fingers. And these were beautiful. But Pox thought again of the militia around the bonfire and their stolen finery. They weren't for her. Not now. More to her mind was the captain's sword and its blue glow. She wanted to ask about it, but she was with a different squad, and she did not know Doran's people that well anyway. Had she imagined it? Could it be a magical weapon, like those of old tales and songs? Pox remembered Doran's scars, those any soldier her age might carry, and thought not. Yet she worried the question in the back of her mind. She had heard of the webmistress, a Kriya. Though around Three Furs, they called her Dark Tangler, or the Dark One. But she had never seen any evidence that a Kriya was real until that spider medallion reacted to Doran's sword. She had thought of a Kriya as another name out of old stories, something in her grandfather's time, perhaps, when orcs attacked Three Furs, not a present danger. Now she had the uneasy feeling that she might not know as much as she'd thought. She pushed that aside and asked her new squad leader about the plunder they were packing. What does the Duke do with chairs and tables and old clothes? The gold I can understand, but
he sells them either down there or back north. There's a good market for good things. Even partly worn things, you'll see.
They built another mound, north of the city, and with the Halverics held another memorial celebration to honor those who had died as Siniava's prisoners or in taking Rotengra. The Guild League cities each sent a representative, but their militias stayed away. Pox was glad. After that, the heavily laden wagons of plunder followed the company north and west to Valdare, along the Guild League route. It was later than usual, already winter, as Arrhenius knew winter, cold and unpleasant enough. Their elation at breaking Rotengra drained away the closer they came to their winter quarters, for every day on the road, they marched with the ghosts of the slain.